everybody. This is Eric Mann. You're on the 4 o'clock hour of Voices from the Frontline on KPFK 90.7 FM. I'm on the phone with one of the lead organizers of the Bus Riders Union from the soundtrack of the same name, from the film of the same name by Haskell Wexler, Cynthia Rojas. Cynthia, are you there? Okay, then I'm going to begin. She's coming in any minute. Let me give you a little background, and let me start by something. This is going to be about a 40-minute segment, and you're going to hear the number 213-387-2800 so many times that you're going to either call it or get sick of hearing it, because we need you out there tomorrow at 10 o'clock at City Hall, 200 Spring Street, between Main and First, to support a motion to oppose the MTA's appeal of the Bus Riders Union Court victory. Cynthia Rojas, are you around?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Cynthia.
Hello.
What I'm going to do, folks, is give a little background as to the, we think, famous civil rights case, the Labor Community Strategy Center and Bus Riders Union versus Los Angeles MTA. And 7 years later, at a time when you're hearing about every single right-wing move against the progressive and left movement, a tremendous victory where your help is needed tomorrow at 10 a.m. So get ready to call in sick for work. Get ready to break off any power breakfast or power lunch. We need you there tomorrow, and I'm going to explain why. In 1993, when the Bus Riders Union got involved, the MTA bus fleet was in not just disrepair, but disintegration. A racist bus system, a racist transportation system was created in L.A., in which the vast majority of the money was going for suburban and even urban rail systems, the Red Line, the Blue Line, the Green Line, which were carrying very, very few passengers relative to the 400,000 bus riders out there, but were increasingly going over budget, and as each one went over budget, they raided the bus system, so that when we got involved in 93 and 94, the MTA had 2,000 buses, and for some of you who are transit dependent, you remember this, and most of those buses were diesel, and at least half of them didn't run at all. We took the MTA into court, and through an amazing set of actions, thanks to the NAACP, Legal Defense and Educational Fund, attorneys Connie Rice, Bill Lamb Lee, and Richard Larson, we won a temporary restraining order against the MTA. We got them to stop cutting the bus fare. We got them to reinstate the bus fare. We got them to reinstate the monthly bus pass that they were trying to get rid of. 2 years later, now we're in 1996, we being the Bus Riders Union, signed a consent decree, that is to say an out-of-court agreement with the MTA, in which they pledged for the next 10 years, 1996 to 2006, to make, number one, the bus system the priority. In order for the bus system to be the priority, that means the train system and the highways are not the priority. To make the urban poor, the transit dependent, the priority. To lower the fares, dramatically increase the buses, reduce overcrowding, and get people to schools, hospitals, and medical centers. This has been hell. Trying to work with the MTA, I never saw an organization that, and I should have, but that signed an agreement with the express intent of violating it. They did the broken treaty strategy on us the way that they did with Native Americans, you know, throughout history. The positive is at a time of declining federal court authority, the federal courts have been pretty excellent in this case and have time and time and time ordered the MTA to buy buses to reduce overcrowding, ordered the MTA to keep its fares low. And through this work, and of course many of you have seen the so-called yellow T-shirted Bus Riders Union members on the bus, Sindicato de Pasajeros, organizing in East L.A., South L.A., Pico Union, all over the city. We have won 2,000 new compressed natural gas buses, and we've gotten rid of 2,000 dilapidated diesel buses. In the last couple of years, the MTA has been very, very hostile to us. The new chair of the MTA, Zev Yaroslavsky, is a right-wing racist, in my opinion, masquerading as a West Side liberal. Or one could say many West Side liberals are right-wing racists, which is even a more frightening thought. So he has been leading the board majority against everything that the Bus Riders Union tries to do. But last January, this January, a fantastic decision came down from a federal judge that's going to benefit all the people in Los Angeles, except for rail contractors, except for those who want to violate signed contracts, and those who, of course, are in the rail industry. Here was what the order said. Number one, the MTA must immediately purchase 381 brand new compressed natural gas replacement buses to modernize its fleet by replacing overage buses, including the last remaining diesel buses in the fleet. That's 381 to replace. The MTA must purchase and place into service an additional 145 compressed natural gas buses to expand the total size of the fleet. That also means, in terms of green jobs in the city, probably 300 drivers, mechanics, 50 mechanics, maintenance people. But again, it expands the fleet by 145 buses. Third, the MTA must operate at least 370,000 additional service hours. The reason for that is because the MTA might buy the buses and then not run them. So the courts distrust the MTA so badly that they're forcing them to say, you buy the buses and then you must run them. Fourth, the MTA must document how each bus and each service hour is assigned to which specific bus line to reduce overcrowding. The reason for that is the MTA is so dishonest that the federal courts themselves can't track where these buses are. Now, they have also asked the MTA to prepare a transitional plan to employ the 145 buses on a temporary basis until they can go out and buy the new ones, which will come in a year and a half. Now, here's where you come in, and here's where Cynthia Rojas comes in. It's been quite an ordeal trying to get the MTA board to not appeal to the Supreme Court, because they have a racist states' rights appeal to first the federal judge, Terry Hatter, and then if they lose to the Ninth Circuit, and then if they lose to the Supreme Court, to get out of this decision. So, Cynthia, what I'd like you to do is start with tomorrow at 10 o'clock and tell us why we have to be there, and then work backwards from the time that you as the one of the field generals of this movement tried to get the MTA to accept this federal decision without the appeal and all the machinations that got you to tomorrow's vote at 10 a.m.
Okay. So, first of all, tomorrow's vote is at 10 a.m. at the L.A. City Council headquarters, which is at City Hall at 200 Spring Street. And what we're going there to do and what we are asking people to join us to do is to support a motion, essentially a resolution, that would mark the opposition of L.A. City as a whole to an MTA board appeal, the sixth appeal, I might add, on this civil rights consent decree. And it's being initiated by two members in particular and supported by others, and those two members are Martin Ludlow, who represents District 10, and Antonio Villaraigosa, who represents, I believe, District 14, East L.A., Boyle Heights area. And the resolution marks many of the things that you just laid out as far as why would L.A. City be calling on the MTA board, which is a county agency, to implement the order for expanded buses and expanded service hours. And essentially the main reasons being what we know is that those who would be most impacted by the implementation of it and also or by the noncompliance of this order are those working class communities, Black, Latino, Asian Pacific Islander, and immigrant communities who the Bus Riders Union represents in the first place in this class action lawsuit. And just to note, 80% of bus riders, MTA bus riders, are based in LA City, and 80% of the bus lines that MTA runs are also based in LA City. So the city council hopefully will follow the lead of Martin Ludlow and Antonio Villaraigosa, who also sit on the MTA board, and they are appointees of the mayor. So I'll just say a couple of things then to say to leading up to this, how we got to here.
Cynthia, just give me a second. You're listening to KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 in Santa Barbara. This is the 4 o'clock report. We call it Voices from the Frontlines. I'm Eric Mann, and I'm here with my co-host, Damon Azali, and we're joined on the phone by Cynthia Rojas, one of the lead organizers of the Bus Riders Union. Go ahead, Cynthia.
Okay, so just to note, so in case people don't know, on the MTA board sit 13 members, five of whom are the very powerful LA County Board of Supervisors. And some of you may have seen the article in the LA Times today, which has its, you know, the particular issue around the supervisor's powers being challenged by, it seems like a fairly small force, but in essence it's bringing up some very real dilemmas in how the county is run by five very powerful people. So they sit on the MTA board in addition to four LA City representatives. In this case, the mayor of Los Angeles sits on the board, and he appoints three members. This time around, like I said, Martin Ludlow, Antonio Villaraigosa, and Tom Labonge have been appointed to sit on the MTA board. And then in addition to those four, sit four representatives from the League of Cities, who are very much based in the suburban communities, Lancaster, Santa Monica, for instance. And so what we see then on the MTA board, and now in this case in particular, is almost a, I don't know, showdown, or essentially the contradiction that has existed for a long time between the suburban communities that are much more wealthier and better off economically, and the inner city. And this was one of the core of the civil rights consent decree fight when we brought this case in 1994, the disproportionate funding that was going to suburban communities in transportation. And now the board essentially has rejected for the sixth time, like I said, implementing the core components of this consent decree, which are to reduce overcrowding in this case, to reduce overcrowding, and further down the line, we're going to be fighting for an expanded new service plan. So MTA voted to appeal for the sixth time with 7 votes, which is a significant shift from past votes for appeals, which were nearly unanimous. In this case, only seven board members were willingly voting to take this appeal to Judge Terry Hatter, which is the next step after the court-appointed special master, Donald Bliss. So essentially that's what then we're going into tomorrow's vote with, is 7 votes that were led by Zev Yaroslavsky, and that include the League of Cities, and that include those forces that are fighting tooth and nail for the suburban communities, and either bus money to the suburban communities, light rail projects, transitways, essentially very expensive capital projects. And now we have, bolstering tomorrow's resolution, and of course initiating it, is a very strong court order from Special Master Donald Bliss for those provisions that you just mentioned.
And Cynthia, let me add 2 things. I think The first thing is important is that even though the MTA has appealed six times, mm-hmm. they've lost six times.
Right.
So it's important that when they go, we're going to appeal, we're going, all right, go cry to your mommy again. You've lost. So we're upset that they're appealing each time they have the hypothetical chance to win. But we think we have a very, very strong case that they've simply violated the court order. They violated the agreement they signed with us, and that even the Supreme Court did not want to look at their case.
Mm-hmm.
But then the second thing is, and then we're going to take a break after you answer this, Cynthia.
Mm-hmm.
The court, even though it was only seven votes to appeal,
mm-hmm.
that seven vote is going to get an appeal.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow's resolution doesn't have the same standing or the same binding nature of it. So what's so important? As an organizer, why is it so important if the city council votes against the appeal, since they can't really change it? The MTA is going to go and appeal anyway. What's the historical significance, and why should people call 213-387-2800 and show up tomorrow at the city council at 10 o'clock?
Mm-hmm. Well, essentially, the historical significance are two things. One, no, it doesn't change the fact the MTA appealed. But it could change the resulting outcome of this appeal. So if they're going into the district court that Judge Terry Hatter presides over with a divided board, he will take note of that, or we hope he does. And in that sense, noting one, that this is MTA's sixth appeal, two, that we for the last 5 years almost have been going through litigation to uphold the authority of the special master. And three, now that the LA City Council, if this resolution passes tomorrow, is even saying we, as in this case, a local government, are requesting that another body representing local government, in this case the MTA, we are requesting that they implement this court order. And so going into it, it has historical implications for the resulting outcome of the appeal. Secondly, it is a historical moment for the reasons you laid out around the civil rights struggle. Here we have a contentious appeal, a contentious court order, because lots of money is on the line that could be redirected back into working class Black, Latino, Asian Pacific Islander communities who are being robbed left and right of every social service that we can think of and that we know of. And here we have, finally, not only the courts, but LA City Council members in this case aggressively intervening in this robbery. And if people support civil rights struggles, if people support a viable transportation system, one for civil rights, but two, even just to clean up some of the poison in our air from the automobile industry, people should be coming out tomorrow to support this resolution.
We'll continue this. Let's take a short break, and when we return, we'll continue our conversation with Cynthia Rojas of Sindicato de Pasajeros.
We are the ones who
This is Eric Mann with speaking to Cynthia Rojas of the Bus Riders Union. I'm here on KPFK 90.7 FM, the 4 o'clock hour. Voices from the Front Lines with my co-host Damon Azali. Cynthia, before you go on, since this is an opinion show and a public affairs show,
mm-hmm.
apparently we received at least one phone call asking, why would I call Zev Yaroslavsky a racist? I think that's worth elaborating a little bit. The first thing is I think that a KPFK audience, but any decent person, should understand that if this society was based on slavery, was based on genocide against indigenous people, if we just heard about a man on death row, a black man who's about to be possibly murdered if we can't stop him when there were three white suspects, if you think racism is only George Wallace and the South, if you don't think racism exists in the North, in the West, in the East, and every other part of this country, let's start with that. That's one of the reasons why there is so much racism in Los Angeles. our previous guest Stephanie talked about the fact that there is so many convictions of black men in Los Angeles, because of the racist policies. Now, if let me tell you one of my concerns. It's not about Zev Yaroslavsky. It's about some of the people in our listening audience. I've seen you, Cynthia, and our own members, mainly Latino, black, Asian, low-income white, disabled, go to the MTA board, be attacked by former chair Hal Bernstein, again, one of the most racist elected officials I've ever seen, also white from the Valley, cutting off people who are speaking Korean, bringing the police down on people, and we try to get people in the city angry about it, and all they want to do is send emails about, have you read the latest conspiracy about George Bush? Do you know that George Bush, they have a fetish about George Bush, but they can't deal with a Zev Yaroslavsky or a Hal Bernstein. The second thing is that some of these people have never been west of La Cienega, I think, let alone Crenshaw, let alone coming down to Cesar Chavez in Venus, or let alone coming down to 200 Spring Street. We have a divide between the white liberals in the city, who some of whom are very good people, who keep wanting to have demonstrations in front of the federal building in Westwood because they don't want to go further than Westwood to protest anything. So if you come and you see that Zev Yaroslavsky is going to pay a lawyer, in fact, pay some lawyers who contributed to his campaign to appeal on a, and what do they appeal the case on? They appeal on a state's rights grounds. A black federal judge, Terry Hatter, in listening to the MTA attorneys who are carrying out what Zev Yaroslavsky wants, said to them, if you want to side with the segregationists, it's okay with me. But to try to overturn the power of a federal judge ordering better bus service for black and Latino and Asian people in L.A. by stooping to a state's rights argument, that is to appeal to Rehnquist, to appeal to Scalia, to appeal to Clarence Thomas, if that's not racism in the most structural, ideological, legal, political, ethical, moral, and cultural way, then I don't know what is. So let's get it on here. This is called Voices from the Front Lines, and you're on the front lines, but a lot of the folks out there have not been on the front lines. They're just sitting at home listening. This is not called listening to the front lines. This is called getting involved in the struggle. So I curtailed myself, as you could see, Cynthia, and I certainly understated my views. But in that context, maybe you'd like to elaborate and continue the discussion.
Okay, around the particulars of the...
Well, where we're going again. Again, the where's the movement going, okay, the significance of it, and what we want this audience to do. And then also, yes, your own experience with the racism of some of the MTA board members.
Right. Well, basically, where's this movement going? It's going in a sense that it's going very strong, and it's you know, as you say, we're not with this appeal down, or we're not you know, feeling lost or what have you. I mean, this is, we're on and up, and we are going strong into this court case. I mean, whether we win or not, I mean, we hope that we win. I have no illusions. We're not, you know, depending on the court system, just, you know, blind faith or what have you. But it is significant what you are marking around just the hostility of this board that we have to deal with every month that we are before them. When I have to fight for translation rights, for language rights, for our members who speak Spanish or Korean and who want to participate in the so-called democracy and who want to be public participants in testimony, I am oftentimes, and I and others are oftentimes very much responded to with hostility and with very crude statements. I mean, Zev Yaroslavsky has said to me, well, why don't you translate? I mean, it is the job of this $3 billion agency to find viable interpreters for the public base that speaks Spanish and Korean, which is the majority of the people who ride their bus system. And he very offhandedly, as a lead organizer, told me this. And that's just one example. Even if we go over 10 seconds of our testimony, we're being shut down, and which is, you know, very different than how other members of the public who come, whether they are elected officials or rail contractors or the heads of the consulting firms that they hire for millions of dollars to try to, they hire these people to figure out how do we get federal money, state money, into our rail coffers. They get all the time in the world, and when we try to address a landmark civil rights consent decree, we are shut down. But even with that political, cultural or context, we are going into tomorrow with a very strong resolution, with great historical significance. And I know we will continue even after tomorrow's resolution to continue to organize around the implementation of this consent decree in its totality, because this is just one of the three main components that we're trying to get implemented tomorrow.
Well, a couple other thoughts I was thinking, Cynthia. First of all, this is Eric Mann with David Azali. We're talking to Cynthia Rojas, the lead organizer, one of the lead organizers of the Bus Riders Union. We're urging you to call the Strategy Center Bus Riders Union, 213-387-2800, to find out exactly how you can show up at City Hall tomorrow to get involved in this movement. If it's okay, Cynthia, I just want to elaborate a little bit more on the racism, actually.
Sure.
And one of the things I think is very important for our audience is to understand that under the 14th Amendment to the Constitution,
mm-hmm.
that allegedly all people are equal, especially based on race.
Mm-hmm.
Any policies that create less services, more brutality,
mm-hmm.
more abuse, for oppressed nationality people, Latino, Black, and Asian, that is the very definition of both national oppression and racism.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, when the MTA, all over the country right now, government agencies with $3 billion are raising bus fares, this January,
mm-hmm.
the MTA, again led by Zev Yaroslavsky,
mm-hmm.
voted to raise the monthly bus fare from $42 bus pass to $52. In my opinion, that policy was structurally racist.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Yaroslavsky, when he passed it and when our people told him that they didn't have the money,
mm-hmm.
he said that bus riders are still making out like bandits.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether bandito is an allusion to Latinos or whether it's about all the pejorative statements about Black people,
mm-hmm.
when poor people get something calling them bandits, I will challenge you, Mr. Yaroslavsky, that is racism. That's racist speech, and it's unacceptable. Then, Zev Yaroslavsky led the absolute hard line to put the mechanics out on strike for 32 days, kept pushing that strike, made his own personal ego the issue there, got involved whether it's him against Neil Silver, which was male chauvinism, male supremacy, and white chauvinism and white supremacy. So why do you think people were on strike for 32 days, and our people could not get to work? That policy was class-biased, anti-union, and racist. And I think what's exciting is we have to understand on the flip side is that a Latino elected official, Antonio Villaraigosa, and a Black elected official, Martin Ludlow, along with Ed Reyes, I believe, and Tom Labange, are providing leadership tomorrow at the city council. So if you get up there and show up at the city council, it's essential that you show what district you're from, that you're in one of the city council districts and you speak and say, based on this district, I need you to vote against the MTA appeal, which is a vote of no confidence in the MTA board. Where do you want to take it from here, Cynthia?
Well, again, I'll just throw out the numbers so people could call up, and even if you can't make tomorrow, come to our next event. So it's 213-387-2800. And, you know, most people, I think, listening would probably know what district they live in. And if you can't come out tomorrow for work or what have you, whatever reason, call up your council person and tell them that you support, it's item 28 on the agenda, and tell them that you support the resolution that is being brought up by Villaraigosa and Ludlow and Reyes against this MTA board appeal.
Okay. Well, then we got that done. We still have a few more minutes. Why don't you tell us a little bit, since a lot of our listeners don't really know what it's like.
Sure.
What's it like going out on the buses? I mean, when there's a lot of groups in the United States, they're what's called advocacy groups, and we support them. They support prisoners or they support poor people. But I think you know that the BRU, Sindicato de Pasajeros, mm-hmm. believes in actually building a movement, which is very, very difficult. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your own history and background, and what's it like for you actually going on the buses to try to build that movement?
Sure. Well, I grew up in a very working class, not very, it was a working class black and Mexicano community that was, like most communities that are not organized, very depressing and very depleted of social services and therefore very ridden with drug and gang problems, etc. So what, when I first came to the Bus Riders Union, it was my first organizing experience, and what we did and what we did then and what we still do now is go out there to these same communities that I grew up in and that many of us grew up in, and we organize mothers with children and welfare recipients and unemployed people who are on parole and looking for a job, domestic workers, janitors, to build a social movement in a general sense that will fight for and to protect and to expand their civil rights, their economic rights, their cultural rights. And so in this case, we go out to the buses and organize for a bus riders union that is a multiracial organization, multilingual, gender-balanced, multigenerational organization that is building the leadership of these people, these constituents, of these, you know, working-class leaders that then in turn go to MTA board meetings or testify in front of the school board. But that's the ultimate goal, where you're organizing people into an organization. What it looks like every day on the buses is it's a hard and difficult time because, again, people are being hit from all sides. I mean, we just heard black men, Latino men are being locked up left and right. Welfare is being cut to pennies. There's no child care. Immigrants, whether they are documented or not, are being attacked left and right again. And in the sense of, I mean, attacked, I don't want to just sound rhetorical, but in the sense that they are materially in dire straits. When you go out there, it's not like people are jumping to get involved in an organization that is actually trying to make a change in policy. But there are people out there who either, one, will join on the bus, join the Bus Riders Union. Dues are $10 to $50 a year, whatever people can afford. Even if it's $5, people will say, yes, I support this. And even if I can't be involved right now because I'm taking care of my grandkids and I still have my, you know, teenage daughter to take care of and I still have this and that to do, they want to become a member. Or they're at least supportive. Or they will come out to a monthly meeting. But going out there day in and day out, you know, you hear the stories of what people are going through. And if you weren't building an organization that was fighting to change these structurally racist policies, you could come away from a day either very depressed or oftentimes you get off the bus and you're really excited because you either met an ex-Black Panther or an ex-revolutionary from El Salvador or Nicaragua, and you realize that there is a lot of wealth in every bus that you get on. And the objective and the hope is that out of that bus you get that one mass leader that will lead the many others. And this is where then we're taking the bus riders union, and that's some of what it looks like out there every day on the buses.
You're listening to 90.7 KPFK in Los Angeles, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, and this is the 4 o'clock hour. This is Damon Azali with my co-host Eric Mann, and we're speaking to Cynthia Rojas, who is one of the lead organizers from the Bus Riders Union, trying to get folks out to City Hall tomorrow at 10, which is at 200 Spring Street, to fight for a resolution that goes against the MTA's recent appeal of the court order. Cynthia, we have probably about 3 minutes left. I wanted to actually ask you a little bit more about, to actually put this in context. This is the latest fight, but as we've seen this last year, we have been hit with 196,000 service hours cut. Uh-huh. There was a 35-day strike. Mm-hmm. There was a fare increase that went up by $10 each. The bus pass went up by $10. Mm-hmm. Transfers were cut completely. All this in this last year, and then I know there's a lot of stuff in terms in relation to the environment, in relation to, a while back there was a protest at the L.A. Auto Show. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if you could connect this more to the environment and how this affects third world nations and internationally.
Okay, sure. Well, one of the main reasons that we started the Bus Riders Union was for the environmental impact of being such an auto-dependent society at large in the United States, but in particular in Los Angeles. In California, 1 in 8 automobiles are sold, that are sold in the United States. So we have a very large market for the auto industry. And what does that lead to? Well, that leads to a massive pumping of poisons into the air. And when I say poisons, I mean literally chemicals that cause cancer, that aggravate asthma, that have led to birth defects. These are known chemicals. I mean, we're not even talking about the ones that we don't even know about. But there are two things. There's chemicals that, air toxins, that do all of these things. And then there are air pollutants. And these are more commonly known as carbon monoxide, nitrogen oxides. And these are the gases that combine with other pollutants to form what is commonly known as smog. And that in turn leads to a lot of respiratory problems, again, aggravating or causing asthma. If you have a heart disease, it aggravates that. For children, it leads to developmental problems. So when we say we want to build a viable transportation system, we want to build a transportation system, one, to improve it for those people whose lifeline is the bus system, but two, to encourage people and then down the line even force people out of their automobile.
Cynthia, I'm going to end you right. That's a great punchline.
Okay.
I'm going to end with some numbers.
Sure.
381. That's 381 brand new buses the MTA must buy, 145, an additional 145 buses they must buy, 370,000 additional service hours, $240 million in improvements for people if we win the vote today, tomorrow, 10 a.m. at the city hall, 200 Spring Street, which is where the event is going to happen, and 213-387-2800, the number to call to get involved.
And this is KPFK, Eric Mann, and Damon Azali. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We're going to have the KPFA Fund Drive coming up. Please support KPFK. We'd like to thank Alan Minsky for production and Maggie LePeak for engineering. We have music from Francisco Herrera and Peter Tosh. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
should I feel?